Welcome to the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I'm Kyla Daw, and I'm glad you decided to join us on today's episode of the show that is shaping how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Rather than advice from experts, our listeners want to hear the insights and ideas from those who, just like them, are on the front lines every day, building meaningful relationships that translate into meaningful support for causes that they and their donors care about. Every week, we invite our guests to have a real conversation about what it means to be a fundraising professional. We're after a greater understanding of what it means to be one of the sector's critically important yet least understood roles, while giving honest answers to our profession's most difficult questions. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. Here's your host, author, fundraiser, and master trainer, Jason Lewis.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Jason Lewis, and I am your host for the Fundraising Talent Podcast. I want to thank you for joining us today for the show that is shaping the way that the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent. Before we introduce today's guest, I want to be sure that we thank our sponsor, OneCause. OneCause is the leader in online, mobile, and virtual fundraising software. OneCause supports over 6,000 nonprofits to reach more and raise more with innovative solutions. You can visit their virtual fundraising resource center at www.onecause.com. I'd also like to tell you about Responsive Fundraising's training retreats. If you're looking to align your team around a shared understanding of effective fundraising, let's talk about our four frameworks. If your culture doesn't feel right before you begin any significant planning or launch a capital campaign, let's ensure everyone is on the same page. How about inviting me or a member of our team to be on site with your board, leadership team, volunteers, and staff for your next planning retreat? If you'd prefer a virtual seminar, we can do that too. Let's get your team thinking more critically about the road ahead. If you're interested, shoot me an email. I'll also put some information in the show notes. Now let's introduce today's guest. Hi, Christy. It is a delight to have you on the Fundraising Talent Podcast today. We're broadcasting from OneCause's Raise Conference, and I'm excited. I got to stick my head into your session a little bit earlier. I'm excited to hear about what you talked to the folks about today. But before we do that, how about you just introduce yourself to our listeners?
Hi, Jason. Thank you so much for having me this afternoon. And yes, I'm excited to be at Raise too. So thanks for attending. My name, as you said, is Christy Howard Schultz. I'm a consultant based out of Indianapolis, Indiana, and I am a social worker turned fundraiser. So I'm very passionate about the subject that I discussed at Raise today, but in general about using and turning cultivating volunteers into donors. I have a long history in my nonprofit career for about 20 years, and I've worked on both sides of the house, program and development, and I just see lots of ways that we could work together better.
Yeah, so I've always appreciated my fundraising career sort of started in Indianapolis with some training that I received. Indianapolis is sort of a fundraising town, isn't it? I mean, you guys take fundraising pretty seriously there.
I think we do, and I think we are so lucky. The resources continue to grow in Indianapolis. We have a good AFP chapter. Of course, now we have partners like OneCause and Boardable. It's become a little tech hub to support nonprofits. And in addition to that, I've always appreciated the support of the charitable advisors, and I think that the work that they do there is such a resource for us that other communities don't even, you know, have a vision for. So I think you're right that we have a pretty special place.
Yes, yes, yes. So, Christy, I stuck my head into your session and I got to read a little bit about it, but I don't want to sort of steal the show. But I do have to say that your topic that you were talking about today at the conference is not a topic that we've talked a lot about here on the podcast. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion. So why don't you tee it up and sort of share with us what we were talking about with the folks at Raise, and then I'll keep you going.
Sure. Today at Raise, we were talking about cultivating volunteers as donors. And I think it's curious that you say that, Jason, you know, that you haven't really talked about that much as a subject. The reason I find that curious is because I have always, my entire career, worked with and for nonprofits that have a robust volunteer base. I've worked for the Boy Scouts of America. I've worked for Big Brothers Big Sisters. I've worked for the Boys and Girls Club. And I find so frequently that it's just part of the organization's culture that we don't ask volunteers to donate. Of course, there are some exceptions to that. But I think it's such a missed opportunity because our volunteers are natural allies. They know so much about us. They love us already. They are giving us something so much more valuable than their financial assets. And so to me, it's a natural relationship that we would engage them as donors. And I think every organization that has volunteers of any type can benefit from engaging their volunteers as donors.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking about that, about why maybe on the podcast we haven't talked about volunteers. And I have to imagine, so most of my guests are usually the fundraising professionals themselves. And so they're perhaps thinking about their own career paths, or we're generally talking about the challenges they interact with their bosses and with their boards and so forth. And so perhaps it's some of this professionalization that sort of fundraising in the sector in general has sort of experienced that sort of causes, you know, volunteerism and the like to sort of become sort of a back burner conversation when a lot of what we do is really about sort of the professionalization of sort of what it is fundraising tends to be all about lately. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think so. I think that it can be an overlooked segment. Like you said, we put so many things on the back burner. I know you were a fundraiser previously. It's like, you know, I think as fundraisers, we're always waiting for that quiet month, you know, like where we say, oh, I've had this idea. I'm going to dig into it when things slow down. And of course, they never slow down. There's always something new to work on, something new that emerges as urgent and important. And so volunteers as donors kind of gets put on the back burner. I think as fundraisers, we also focus a lot on, you know, renewals and not quite as much on acquisition or on upgrades, right? On further cultivating people in the donor life cycle. And so I think that they can go overlooked for that reason too. But as the industry changes, you know, which you just mentioned, kind of fundraising as an industry growing up, I think one of the things I've noticed over the last few years, and certainly volunteers as donors is a nod to this, is we have so much greater opportunity when we tailor our communications to people. And so segmentation has become increasingly important as artificial intelligence allows all of us to be segmented, you know, in our consumer life. And so we have to learn from business and sort of do what we can with our thin bench and our limited resources to do the same. And so speaking to people, meeting them where they are, acknowledging the contributions that they make and how their space that they take up in our organizations is so key to meeting them where they're at and engaging them. And it helps us work really smarter instead of harder. There's work on the front end, but it pays, you know, in multiples, right?
Yeah, I'm thinking about, so I remember something, Christy, I've been in fundraising a little more than 20 years, and some of your comments sort of remind me of some of the advice that I think I was given probably in that first fundraising 101 sort of training. You know, it was at some conference or something, and it was perhaps an extended session for a couple of days. And I remember a statistic, and I think I've oftentimes repeated this in my own seminars, and it's the idea that like 90% of volunteers, if given the opportunity in a meaningful way, will become donors. But then I think about my own role as a fundraiser and while I was in management for a time, and I think about how oftentimes it perhaps it's something like sort of putting the cart before the horse. We tend to maybe try to leverage volunteerism after they've become donors. And we always seem to mess it up. That's one of the things I think it tends to be like we're trying to sort of enhance the relationship for the donors when maybe, in fact, we should have afforded them a volunteer opportunity first. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, if someone is involved in your mission in a practical, a tactical way, you know, they can touch it. They can in these days see it.
Yeah.
Hear it. It so naturally lends itself. You know, I have never worked in or for an organization where I was not you know, automatically bought in. I'm all in. Like if I'm there, if I have my feet on the ground, if I can hear the kids' voices, if I can see the food served, if I can smell the food served, if I can, you know, you're all in. It's just a natural progression. And so, to not offer people the opportunity to engage with the mission first, and then become a donor is kind of the cart before the horse. I agree with you.
Yeah. So what's your thoughts on, so one of the things that we talk about at Responsive is this idea that if volunteerism, if your volunteer efforts are not sort of coordinated well, that we end up with what I oftentimes refer to as a low capacity volunteer. And the low capacity volunteer is that individual who's just not being given an opportunity to sort of maximize their strengths and their talents, whatever their strengths happen to be. And I'm oftentimes saying to clients, recruit volunteers, identify their strengths, and put them in roles where they can be high capacity volunteers. But then it oftentimes comes down to a control concern, the idea of sort of handing off a responsibility to a volunteer and, oh my, perhaps they might mess it up and embarrass the institution. How do we get sort of on the other side of that when it comes to volunteers, this fear and this anxiety, this sort of this hesitation that if I put this responsibility in the hand of a volunteer who isn't on my payroll, who I can't fire, who I can't reprimand, who I can't evaluate, who I can't control, things will get messed up.
Oh, I feel like I have so many responses to this question. So I think the first thing is, just as you said, that, and I actually meant to talk about this in my presentation earlier today, and I got so excited by the interaction that I left this out. So I'm so happy that you asked this, but I think that, everybody calls it something different. I would call it a talent and interest survey, right? Like yeah. You're saying, like, what do you want to do? What do you see yourself doing? What do you enjoy doing? Because I think that's another error that we commonly make as volunteer managers is to say, oh, well, Jason, you're a fundraiser for a living. Woo! We can't wait to have you work on our gala committee. But Jason, you may not want to do that because you do that all day long for a living, right? You may love yeah. editing, or you may love secretly you're really good at graphic design, and you know, I don't know that, right? So
yeah, not me.
I'm not good at that one either, but you know, like if we don't ask, and I think there's some organizations that are really good at doing that, like Love Inc., which Love in the Name of Christ is what the acronym stands for. Okay. They are a national organization. If you go to any of their affiliates' websites, they actually have a talent and interest survey on their website. I've worked at other organizations where we do that as part of board orientation or volunteer recruitment. So I think that's the first step. And then as far as trusting, I mean, I think you got to test the water small, right? So like it's very difficult for us, especially in a time like this where things are really uncertain. We tend to kind of like white knuckle things and hold on tight. And it's difficult to trust other people and trust their judgment. But test the water with a small project, right? I love developing boards in the way where you come in through a committee. And I would say the same thing with volunteer work, because what you do in the committee shows me how you're going to be as a board member, right? And so the same thing with volunteer activities, test the water small and see what the potential is. And then beyond that, I would also challenge the assumption that you can't, this is a hot take, but fire a volunteer. And so I have worked in organizations where we do actively ask, we remove volunteers. And so I think that having an onboarding process for your board and volunteer members, just as you would if you were the head of HR, and having an evaluation process, a self-evaluation, an outside evaluation, just helps keep expectations clear and helps us all advance our own agenda. So like if your volunteer wants to develop as a person, you're ensuring that they get to do what they want to do and develop the skills that they in relationships that they want to. And as an organization, you're making sure that your needs are met as well. And so, yeah.
You know, it's interesting. You kind of, I think I've given the same advice, and I think it comes down to, I think I've said this a number of times to a number of people over the years, this idea that nonprofit organizations are not particularly good at letting our constituents, whether they be staff, whether they be, you know, employees or donors or volunteers, just wear one hat. Mm. And what I mean by that is the idea that sometimes a volunteer just wants to be a volunteer because it's what they're good at, or a donor just wants to be a donor, or a staff member wants to be a staff member, and they don't want to sort of be asked to do these other things because perhaps it doesn't fit with sort of their time of life or the resources that they have. But it seems like we're always trying to put multiple hats on people. Do you sort of observe that sort of behavior in some of the charitable organizations you've worked with?
I do. I think it's like that chronic all hands syndrome, you know, like where eventually every volunteer and every staff member is working every night and every weekend, right? There's mission creep and there's role creep, and that obviously is can be toxic or can be dangerous, and at the very least unpleasant. So I do think it's a fine line and a balance. I also think that this is something that we talked a little bit about today. I think this is also where it's so important to have a good relationship with both sides of the house, the program side and the development side, because a lot of times, when our volunteers and or our donors feel inundated, it's because we didn't do a good job as professionals of coordinating an effective operations plan, right? So for everything, there is a season, and everything, there is a time. And so if we can work together effectively to look at the big picture about advancing our organization's mission, we can effectively ask for the things we need without overwhelming people or diluting our purpose, I think. But it takes a lot of intentionality and planning and cooperation.
Yeah. So, Christy, we're going to take a break. But when we come back, I noticed that today you had over 400 people in your session. And I want to hear about what the conversation sounded like and what sort of questions you got. So we'll talk to you in just a few minutes.
Thank you.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Teresa Lee, Responsive's lead consultant in New England. Our four frameworks model is a great way to assess your organization's fundraising culture, organize your fundraising plan, learn to measure major gift processes and outcomes, and prepare your organization now for a campaign. I would be happy to share our models with your team in our two-day workshop. If you are updating a strategic plan, launching a capital campaign, or hiring a new member of your fundraising team, let's ensure you're aligned around a shared understanding of how fundraising really works. Let's talk about how we might partner together. I can be reached at teresa@responsivefundraising.com. My contact information is also in the show notes.
All right, Christy, thank you. I am really enjoying this conversation. Like I said, when we got started, we haven't talked about volunteers, haven't talked about volunteer programming and how do we raise up, you know, high capacity volunteers, as I call them. But one of the things that I noticed is that in your session today at the RAISE conference, you had over 400 people in there. And I am just darn curious about what sort of questions you got, given sort of this current landscape where it's not like you can line up volunteers in the building and give them tasks that, you know, sort of require really lots of closeness. I mean, we're all wearing masks and we're all social distancing and stuff. So that has to play into maybe some of the questions you heard. So what kind of questions did you hear today?
Yeah, we had so many great questions, and that's the thing I love about any professional development opportunity, but particularly RAISE. I always learn more than I ever come to talk about. You know what I mean? I mean, it's so great to be able to gather even in this strange virtual way. And so we had great questions. A lot of the questions centered around what you just referenced is, you know, okay, well, we're not able to do business as usual. So what can we do? And so some folks shared examples of what's been working and what hasn't. And I shared some examples of things I've witnessed with clients or with previous organizations. I think some of the opportunities for us are to, you know, just think about things differently. So like, what are things that we can do outside that we used to do inside? What are ways that we can engage people who are already in their own immunity pod, right? So if your organization packs food for a pantry or hands out food for a pantry, instead of having corporate groups, can you schedule people by family, right? So your whole family is quarantined together. Can you have family days to do that? Other things would include, which people had questions about, you know, it's like, what are things that people can do remote? So obviously there's some confidentiality implications and things like that, but obviously, writing thank you notes or making calls, even doing some data scrubbing or data entry, those things that as fundraisers we have on our operations plan, but always get pushed to that, you know, that magical month where we're not too busy, right? Here's a time where we can trust, as you indicated, volunteers and engage them to help us with things like this that can be really meaningful to the bottom line. And just think creatively about things like that.
Yeah, it would seem to me like now would be the time, because we know that there's, and we certainly don't want to celebrate, I guess you could say, furloughs and layoffs and those sorts of things. But we're having to sort of, in some cases, shrink our staff for, you know, in order to, you know, we have shortfalls in the revenue or something like that. But this would seem to me like one of those places in time where we could utilize volunteers in what I call this high capacity role, because some of the people that are highly capable, we've laid off or they've left or they've changed jobs or something like that. I mean, how often are you seeing when you enter, and maybe this topic came up, but are nonprofits willing to sort of give some of these very significant responsibility? I always see, this is what I'm asking, I always see us sort of assigning, you know, fundraising responsibilities and, you know, things that can oftentimes seem very trivial, but I don't see us assigning and delegating things that are much more meaningful and significant, and perhaps even things that would, that once our volunteers are invested in them, would actually keep them around for a while. I want to think of a volunteer as somebody who can be counted on for long term. Mm-hmm. Are organizations just scared of that? Are they hesitant?
Well, I think you hit on something that's so powerful, and it's something that we have the opportunity to overcome. But I really do think it is about trust, right? Because if we ask someone to do something for us, so I think an example, like you're saying, of a high capacity activity would be, I don't know a single organization that doesn't need someone to have a careful eye on all of their materials, marketing materials, emails, right? Like, we all get emails that are 1,000 words long, and you're opening it and you're thinking, there's no way that our constituents are reading this, right? Like, but to trust a volunteer enough to accept that feedback, accept that editing, or, you know, in this one example, that's the thing. If we're asking them to do it, we have to be willing to take their advice, right? And who knows better than them, you know, what messages resonate or how things are useful, what information is needed. So we have to trust them not only to do the work, but then like take the advice that they give us and put it to good use. Otherwise, I wouldn't stick around, just as you said, you know, I mean, I don't think you'd stick around either. So I have a family. I give my advice all day long that they don't take.
Right. Well, yeah, Yes. I give my wife advice all the time, and she's like, no, I don't need to. Yeah. Go about your thing, Jason, and I'll do my thing. So,
yeah. Right.
So there's always, we have worked conferences like this before, and I always like asking this question, and sometimes you don't get them, but sometimes there's that question in the audience that was way out in left field. You totally didn't expect it. But having been asked it, it's like, wow, that was a really good question. Did you get one of those today?
I don't know that we got one of those. I did both. I think Ray's, this is their fourth year. I have attended two of the years and spoke both times. And both times I was struck because, having a long career in nonprofit as you have, I think sometimes like, oh, I've seen it all, or I've done it all, or I've heard about it all. Not that I've actually done it all, but I've heard about it all. But both times, last year and this year, you know, there's all different types of organizations, open loop, closed loop, healthcare, alumni based, you know, like I said, we get kind of siloed off on these industries. But what I realized is I have not had a lot of interaction with research institutes or social justice, you know, like the Legal Aid Clinic or reentry organizations, right? Those organizations, those populations that are not so fun, exciting, meaning to the general audience, to the general consumer, right? You kind of have a specific passion for that. And so I think this is a long answer to your question, but I think thinking about those types of nonprofits and every year when those types of nonprofits ask questions, I think, wow, I really have to challenge a lot of my assumptions and a lot of what I know about best practices, because puppies are really fun to love and they're easy for the general audience to engage with. Same thing with little kids for the most part, unless you just don't like them, which is fine. but there are organizations that are doing wonderful work that it's much more difficult to engage a general audience.
Oh yeah, I totally get that. And I have to imagine that that's particularly relevant right now, where a lot of people are saying, and we're certainly talking about this in the context of fundraising, that some people are sort of shifting their priorities towards things that seem more relevant and timely, as opposed to some of those things that they're, you know, those sort of tried and true commitments that they've made to organizations that have sort of always been at the top of their list. But I can think of some of the volunteer work that I have done. For example, I for a number of years, I did some work in the prisons. And I also remember when I was doing some, when I was in camp ministry, I remember, we had a week or we had 2 weeks of camp that was for special needs, you know, special needs kids, I guess. And a lot of, sometimes these were special needs adults, and it required a particular of our camp staff. Some of our volunteers were particularly suited for that type of work, whereas others didn't have the patience or didn't have sort of the skill set. And so I have to imagine that's a very thought-provoking sort of, I may have to simmer on that all day, but I kind of wonder, did that question sort of come up? Like, is like the recent social unrest sort of going to influence where people are willing to volunteer their time differently than they might have, say, or even like COVID-19, are people wanting to invest their time differently now than they might have wanted to, you know, 6 months or 12 months ago?
Yeah, it did. And I think with those types of organizations, you know, I think that a lot of times, you know, as fundraisers, we're trying to focus on celebration, right? Like celebrating like, you know, graduations or milestones or, you know, these types of things. It's harder. It's a different, how do I want to say this? It's a different approach. You are certainly celebrating things in those organizations, but it's a much longer trajectory. It's not immediate gratification. Not that any of us are working with immediate gratification in the nonprofit sector, but like if you're trying to work on prison reform, that's a long game. That's a far longer game than even improving graduation rates, right? And so I think it is. It's, you know, it's a wicked problem, and I am so happy to learn from people who are in those sectors. That again, that's something I really love about RAISE, is that you're not siloed off just in your own category. We have so much to learn from each other. And certainly those colleagues have taught me a lot over the last few years at RAISE.
Yeah, Christy. So I have really enjoyed this conversation. You sort of warmed me up on this topic of volunteers. Like I said, we just don't talk about volunteers a whole lot. I sort of feel somewhat ashamed, but we got it started. So maybe we'll have another guest who wants to continue the conversation about how volunteers sort of fit into our new current reality. But if somebody else is listening to our conversation, they know how to find me, but they want to track you down, continue this conversation, and perhaps enlist you for some of your help. I have to imagine that you have something you do. I didn't ask that to begin with. So tell me a little bit about what you do, and then tell us how people can contact you. And then the other thing I like to ask is, when somebody reaches out to you, Christy, who's that ideal person you want reaching out to you? So if you could sort of cover those three bases before we wrap up, I would be much, much grateful for that.
Oh, well, you're so kind. So I am a consultant, and my sweet spot is organizations that are kind of smaller, so like around $1 million. Mm-hmm. And I work with organizations to build capacity. So if your organization is on the cusp where, you know, you're an executive director, and as you said, you're wearing 1,000 hats and you're harried and you can't do it anymore, and you're ready to make that leap in the next year or two from, you know, 800,000 to 1.5 million. That's kind of my sweet spot, is let's build the infrastructure. Let's train the board and the staff, and let's raise enough money to get that full-time development director. So that's kind of my sweet spot. I blog for the Lilly Family School of Philanthropy, so you can follow me there. And I can be found at my name, which is spelled all the wrong ways, but Christy Howard Schultz with no C .com. You can connect with me on LinkedIn and see a little bit more about what I do there. And yeah, that's kind of my passion. I also love working with, human services, youth development organizations, but I work with lots of other kinds as well. But those are close to my heart.
Cool. Christy, I have really enjoyed this conversation. You're always welcome back. So if you've got a big idea or bold opinion that you'd like to share with our listening audience, you're certainly welcome to do that. Thank you for being on the show today.
Jason, thank you for having me and for offering your thought leadership in this platform for us to, you know, connect with each other on.
Have you read the book that nonprofit leaders and fundraising professionals alike are calling a must read? In this pocket manifesto for today's fundraising professional, Jason deconstructs why many of us find ourselves working for organizations where we cannot accomplish our goals. These same organizations are notorious for rapid turnover and high donor attrition. To avoid this all too familiar path, Jason offers direction from those who want to be recognized and admired for their work. The war for fundraising talent challenges our ingrained beliefs and assumptions about how effective fundraising really works, and it questions the prevailing wisdom hiring decisions and donor behavior. Published by Gatekeepers Press, The War for Fundraising Talent is now available on Amazon and other major retailers. We want to thank you for listening to today's episode of the Fundraising Talent Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's show and hope you will come back for next week's interview, where we will discuss with those on the front line who are defining what it means to be a fundraising professional. If you'd like to be a guest on the Fundraising Talent Podcast, visit our Facebook page or email Jason at jason@lewisfundraising.com. In your email, be sure to tell us about where you work and why you believe you would be a great addition to the upcoming lineup. Thank you again for joining us today, and we look forward to you being a part of the continuing conversation as we shape how the nonprofit sector thinks about fundraising talent.